Back with you, start of another busy week, busy show, Monday, April 5th, 2021, right here on Connecticut Today on WICC 600. Governor Ned Lamont, just after the top of the hour at 4, gave us the first of what would likely be two COVID updates during the week. The governor said we're doing pretty well, considering the ongoing process of vaccinating the state against the coronavirus. He had updated numbers for that and more. 5 o'clock hour, we wrapped up with State Rep Kim Fiorello, Lower Fairfield County Republican, talking about the many bills that are kind of still floating around the General Assembly that would allow the state some purvey over local zoning. Also, I opened up the show coming off the weekend with my thoughts regarding what I think is duly unwanted criticism and unnecessary to one of the coaches who knocked off UConn in the NCAA Women's Final Four. I did want to start out with something sports-related. The other big sports news over the weekend, and of course you heard, unfortunately, here on WICC 600, the UConn Huskies were eliminated by the Arizona Wildcats on over the weekend, where their coach after the game, Adia, I'm not sure how she pronounces her first name, but Adia Barnes, gathered her team for a celebratory huddle. They beat UConn, I think, by 10. And, of course, the cameras, I think they're on ESPN, cameras, you know, poking in there, and the mics turned up and everything. And, listen, it was a moment with her team, and Coach Barnes made no bones about the fact during the tournament that she felt that her team was, you know, disrespected. It was essentially, she said, you know, Stanford, UConn, and everybody else. And during those celebratory moments, you could see her clearly saying something to her team and using the ever popular one finger salute. And who nobody knows whether she said F this or F them or F UConn, whatever. And oh my God, people over the weekend, you would have thought that it was Mother Teresa dropping the F-bomb. Oh, my God. This is just awful. I mean, I'm reading some of these letters to the editor and hot responses on some of these Twitter feeds. Doesn't she know she's supposed to be an inspiration to these young women? How coarse. How coarse. Obviously, people saying that, obviously, have never played a competitive sport or coached it or watched it closely or covered it as a media person, you know, above the Little League level. You know, that was a great example of a moment we saw there where maybe the microphones and the cameras shouldn't be there. Yes, but they're there. Don't they know they're there? It's emotion. Sports, no matter whether it's Little League, high school, junior league, prep school, low minors, high minors, professional athletes, kids who make nothing, guys who make $40 million a year. Sports is an emotional thing. And she was talking to a team saying, hey, we got no respect. They gave us no respect. We just knocked off UConn. And whether she was saying F them, meaning F UConn, F the NCAA, whatever, who cares? And I know what you're saying. Well, who cares, Paul? Why are you talking about it? Well, because this whole, we live in a society now where everybody's got to weigh in on something. And I understand at the root of what I do here is weighing in on something. But man, oh man, sometimes you just got to tell people, shut up. Oh my God. Stories about it in every newspaper in the state and deep, deep editorials. Well, you know, we have to reevaluate this. Get out of here with that. Oh man. Says right here in the Connecticut Post, the F everybody, that was something of a rallying cry for a team that entered its first Final Four as a decided underdog against UConn. The theme of disrespect percolated throughout the tournament as Arizona was seemingly motivated by not even being featured in the NCAA Final Four highlight video this week. No wonder she did what she did. Come on, man. I've covered this stuff ever since, you know, 30, 40 years doing this. Covered high school stuff for radio and for print, college stuff on a high Division I level. for the last 10 or 12 years, up to a couple of years ago, coaches use motivation all the time. Yeah, language gets a little tough. Who listening to me right now didn't play a high school sport or even a college sport or a traveling team sport where the coach got on your case or used the age-old motivational tactic of saying, hey, we're not respected. They don't respect us. So good for her. And anybody who's ever played a sport or covered a sport or coached a sport, you know what they'll tell you? They'll say, hey, yeah, their team's better than us if we're not that good. It's one thing to lose. It's one thing to lose. I've covered teams and watched teams closely who are just not as good as other teams they play. They don't have the size, the speed, the agility. But when a team doesn't get respected, any coach will tell you that that's the thing that really fires up the emotion on a sideline or in a locker room. Hey, we're not respected. Now, it's one thing for a team not to disrespect another team, and she's not making any assertions here, or assertions here, but you kept reading all throughout the couple of weeks of the tournament that said, hey, you know, well, Arizona, yeah, it's UConn, Stanford, and Arizona, and everybody else. And she didn't like that. So listen, everybody who was weighing in on this, oh, my God, this is just awful. I have an idea. How about ESPN keep their cameras out of the huddle? How about they get their cameras out of everybody's face? How about you get your shotgun microphones and your cameras out of these faces of these guys and gals coaching these people? Give them a little time. Well, Paul, they're in the spotlight. Yeah, I know they're in the spotlight, but that doesn't mean you've got to be up their backside with a camera. Oh, my God.
The summary says to me is no big changes. This is now going on, for a month or so now. No pending fourth wave, for example. Our positivity rate, 3.28%. It's been between 3 and 4% now for well over a month. Hospitalizations, remember, these are three-day numbers, trending down a little bit, which is great. Fatalities up a little bit. That's 19, but that is over 3 days. So I feel like it's steady as she goes here. We're looking for any sharp breaks. We've talked a lot about hospitalizations, so Josh put this chart together. Here's what it says to me. That top line is the yellow line. Those are hospital admissions. Blue are those who are being discharged, and unfortunately the red are the fatalities. What it says is you'll see the number of hospital admissions was up a lot in mid-January. Got close to 200. Now we're down at about half that number, more like 100 or so. And these tend to be a little younger people and probably a little less sick. Back as 8 months ago, they're older people and a lot more sick. One thing that means, even since January, that red line at the bottom, the fatalities, tragically, about 15% of the people didn't make it out of the hospital. And today, that's only 5%. So you get an idea of how it's relatively healthier people, a little less at risk, a little less time in the hospital. It tells you a little story about what's going on in our hospitalizations and our additional capacity there. Look, on a happier note, here's the vaccine update. I consider this pretty good news. Despite a hiccup with J&J last week, our doses have continued unabated. We're going to have 288,000 additional doses delivered this week. That's 288,000 additional appointments you can make. So don't hold back. The vast majority, two-thirds plus of the people 45 and above, have now been vaccinated. And Scott was saying it's obviously a much higher number than that who have some sort of antibodies given the nature of the infections that we suffered, especially going back some months. 45% of all adults have been vaccinated, but we still have a way to go with the 16 to 45-year-old age group. They've only just opened up, and that's about 18%. So What has this said to me when it comes to our reopening strategy is that places that are more oriented towards an older demographic, say restaurants before 11 o'clock, say retail stores, say houses of worship, we've got them open and no plans to turn that back. I think more and more of the people going there have been vaccinated, have the antibodies, and can wear the mask safely. I would tell the group, the younger demographic, say 20 to 30, we still have to think about bars. We still have to think about concert venues. We'll be given some guidance on that in the next couple of weeks, but get vaccinated. Get vaccinated now. There is capacity, and that will make our decision-making a lot easier. I think we can give you some guidance at this early stage that we anticipate at this point, unless something changes dramatically, that there will be outdoor parades, that there will be outdoor graduations, and even indoor graduations wearing the mask if there's inclement weather. I know that's important to a lot of you as you want to plan ahead, plan on it. This next chart, protecting the most vulnerable. That green line is the 75 and above. You can see they're well over. They're over 80% of them have gotten vaccinated. 65 to 74 took us, almost another month before they were added, but you see where they are going forward, what a difference that's made. And go right through to 45 to 54, you can see how they're ramping up. I'm really pleased that they're getting vaccinated with some urgency. There's no slack in the system at this point. And the 16 to 44, you see we hope to get to 40% of them vaccinated within the next week and 60% vaccinated within the next couple of weeks, which is why we feel that by the end of April, we'll be in a very different position and hopefully a more confident position, what we can expect for the future. Folks with developmental disabilities, you know that we've paid special attention there. Obviously, nobody is being turned away due to age. That's opened up now since Thursday. But more importantly, like a lot of our underserved communities, we're bringing the mobile vaccination vans to you. We're bringing the mobile vaccination vans to the communities with disabilities, often folks who are at some risk, often folks who can't go to that drive-through clinic. We just read this note. It meant a lot to me. I'd like to compliment the efficiency and comfort of the Kennedy Center, the vaccination clinic this past Friday. There's always a comfort when you go to a place that may be stressful for our loved ones and end up seeing so many friendly and familiar faces. So we've got close to half of the folks that had not been vaccinated, now vaccinated in the developmental disabilities community, dds.covid19@ct.gov. That's where you go. We'll get the van to you or make that appointment, make it easier for you to get your loved one vaccinated. And finally, talk about getting easier to get vaccinated. These are our vax vehicles. We got these going out on the street, 35 of them this week going to be out there. I think they're kind of easy to find from a distance. And some of them right now have walk-up capability, but get an appointment, that's a lot easier. They're gonna be widely available all over the state. And like I said, very soon, there's gonna have an ice cream truck type mentality. You'll be able to walk up and get a vaccine. We've also rolled out to hundreds of pharmacies across the state right now. Not just Walgreens and CVS, but across the board, including our independent pharmacies, where our very own Chief of Staff, Paul Mounds, was vaccinated this morning. He's feeling a lot better, feeling pretty confident. Primary care pharmacies across the board, being able to increasingly get people vaccinated there. And again, I'll leave you with the thought that we're still going to focus on younger demographic, 16 to 45. In particular, we're seeing some flare-ups in and around the college age population, high school sports. It's we used to be out there trying our best to protect the seniors. Now we're also going to do the best we can to protect the younger. So for high school and college base, we're going to bring the clinics. We're going to be bringing the mobile vans to you. To make sure that you can get vaccinated safely and we can keep this school year going or in the college kids, they can get home safely. With that, we've got Josh and Paul And as I mentioned before, Scott Gottlieb, thanks, Scott, so much. Appreciate you being here to answer any of your questions. If you want to know about the B.1.1.7 variant versus the New York variant, Scott's your man. If you want to find out about vaccine validation, some of the different strategies out there, Scott's your man. Scott, as you know, is on the board of Pfizer and pretty authoritative on all the vaccines and their efficacy against these different variants. So with that, love to take your questions.
Channel 3 Eyewitness News.
Yes, a question for Dr. Gottlieb. How do you see the virus progressing in our state, especially when it comes to the most vulnerable population? Do you feel like we're at a point right now where we can open up further because we've given every eligible person the opportunity to be vaccinated?
Look, I think that this month we're going to see a tipping point. The bottom line is because the vaccination rates among 65 and over are frankly among the highest in the nation. We've had really good penetration among the elderly population, which is the most vulnerable population. We're going to have more opportunity to lean forward. I think that you're going to see, hopefully, a situation over the course of this month where you really start to see cases decline, hospitalizations decline more dramatically. If you look at what happened in Israel, Israel started to tip over in terms of starting to see declines from their vaccination campaign when they reached about 26% of their population penetrated with vaccine. We've crossed that nationally. We crossed that a while ago in this state. And so I think you're going to start to see the declines accelerate in the state. And you know, my view has been all along that as we get more of the vulnerable population vaccinated and get some more immunity into vulnerable people, we can start to take more risk with what we're doing. We're never going to get to zero COVID. COVID's always going to circulate. It's going to be a fact of life probably for a long time. What we want to do is try to get enough immunity in the population, enough protection to the vulnerable population, that we could take more risks in terms of what we're doing in our daily activities. And I think we're going to be at that point this month.
Thank you, Doctor. And a real quick question for Governor Lamont. You know, last week, if my numbers are correct, 24% of our residents were fully vaccinated. At the end of May, where do you see our state when it comes to fully vaccinated residents? And what is the target for herd immunity in Connecticut?
I'll start. I think Josh estimates that we ought to get about 60% of our people vaccinated by the end of April, or even a little sooner than that, in the next 2 weeks or so. I think that'll be a tipping point there. You know, as you know, a fair number of people were previously infected, probably in a very mild way, asymptomatic way, but they do have some antibodies. So we are not at herd immunity yet, but we're getting closer. Young people, get vaccinated.
Thank you.
NBC Connecticut.
Governor, I just had one quick question. Have you reached out to any Georgia companies and asked them if they want to actually come to Connecticut, where we are in the process of expanding voter rights right now? I know that that was a topic of conversation last week in relation to the legislation that was presented in Georgia.
What type of companies did you say?
I was just asking if you have heard from any companies about possibly coming to Connecticut, or if you've been in any conversations with some of those.
I haven't had those conversations with any of those companies. But look, I think Major League Baseball did the right thing. I think I'd love to see the corporate community standing up. I think we ought to make it easier for people to vote and have a stake in the elections and have a stake in the outcomes. So, and I think I think we all are here in Connecticut trying to do more to make it easier to vote with integrity. I think we did that pretty well during the last election. I want to do that again.
I got you. And just to confirm, you have not reached out to any of the Georgia companies. Is that correct?
That's correct.
News 8. News 8.
You're listening to Governor Fox Ned Lamont 61. Take questions from the press corps during today's
For Governor and Dr. Gottlieb. Dr. Gottlieb, update. I've been reading some articles where doctors have expressed concern that great that vaccinations are up around the country, but as that has happened in a lot of the country, the testing for COVID is down and that there are then concerns with that. So I guess twofold, do you see that happening around the country? And is that kind of happening here in Connecticut where maybe the testing for COVID is down a little bit as we try and get as many people vaccinated?
Yeah, I actually don't think testing's down. I think testing's up. I think what's happening around the country is that more of the testing is shifting to antigen-based tests that are being run in austere environments, schools, workplaces, even doctor's offices, where the results aren't necessarily getting reported. I mean, I think earlier in this pandemic, the negative results were more consistently reported. I think what's happening right now is a lot of antigen tests are getting into the hands of folks who aren't necessarily consistently reporting negative results, including consumers who are testing at home. But once you get a positive result on one of those antigen tests, typically someone will reflex to PCR, and in that PCR result will get reported. So I think that there's a possibility that we're actually overstating the positivity rate, not understating it, or because we're actually doing more testing, and what's getting reported are more of the positive tests, and what's getting underreported are more of the negative tests. Because there was a statistic out from the federal government recently trying to estimate the number of antigen tests that are being done and aren't getting reported. And they put it at around 3x, if I remember correctly, the data. I don't believe it's that high, but I think that there's a whole lot of testing going on that's not making its way into the system right now.
And for Governor Lamont, with school districts, you just talked about the possibility of outdoor graduations going on. And if they're indoor, then with masks. What about with, say, prom season is coming up? Is that an area where you might go with the leaving it up to each district, or will you make a determination similar to what you'll do with proms, or similar to what you'll do with graduation, rather?
Well, I think graduation, primarily outside, everybody wearing the mask, I think you can count on that. I'd like to think that we're going to give you clear guidance on proms within a week or so. If you're going to school, you've got your cohort of friends. I'd like to think we can have a nice prom this spring. But let us watch the numbers just a little bit more carefully and get back to you within a week.
Thank you.
Fox 61.
Hi, I just have a quick question for Dr. Gottlieb. Could you talk to us a little bit about this new double mutant COVID variant discovered in San Francisco area? Do we have any information on this? And then any concerns, obviously, with that popping up here in Connecticut and our current COVID vaccinations working against this?
Yeah, I don't have a lot of, I saw the headline cross today. I don't have a lot of information about that. Right now, I think, you know, what you're seeing with these new variants is you're seeing what we call convergent evolution. So it's not necessarily the case that something originates in one part of the world and then it slowly propagates around the world. This virus is mutating spontaneously to develop these now what we are recognizing as these more common mutations, like the E484K mutation, the one that you see in 1351, the South African variant, and that you see also in P1. The Brazilian variant. So this is kind of happening spontaneously in different parts of the world. It's just kind of growing up as the virus in different parts of the world figures out how to incorporate some of these mutations. So you're going to continue to see this. You're going to continue to see new strains emerge that incorporate different collections of mutations. And I think one of the things we're going to start doing probably pretty soon is thinking of these new variants, not necessarily as the UK variant or the South African variant, but we're going to start to classify them more by the mutations that the variants contain rather than the strains themselves. And the 484K mutation being the one that is causing a lot of concern because it appears to have the potential to reduce the effectiveness of prior immunity, including through vaccination.
WTIC 1080 News.
Hi, Dr. Gottlieb. Just wanted to ask you for comment on how the messaging is going, getting the word out that everyone should get vaccinated. One of the headlines in the Times this afternoon is white evangelical resistance is an obstacle in the vaccination effort. So it seems like there's a lot of different demographics which are still opposing the vaccine.
Yeah, what worries me is that as you get into the younger demographic, you're not going to have the same risk demand that we saw among older individuals. I think that there was a lot of demand among 65 and above. And when you get into 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds, you're not going to see the same level of demand. It's going to be harder to get the same level of penetration. And look, if you look at flu vaccination rates, it's sort of a barbell. You see a brisk uptake among the young because we require vaccination among children, and you see brisk uptake among the elderly because they recognize that they're uniquely vulnerable to influenza and they go out and get vaccinated every year. And then you don't see a lot of vaccination in sort of the 20 to 45-year-old demographic. And I think as we get into that demographic now and eligibility expands, I worry that the demand's not going to be there, and we're going to really have to work at it trying to get 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds to take the vaccine. They should get vaccinated. They're at less risk from the virus, but they're not risk-free from the virus, and I think everyone should get vaccinated. They also should get vaccinated because they could be asymptomatic carriers of the virus and put other individuals who are at higher risk, at risk of a bad outcome, of getting the virus and having a bad outcome. So we're going to need to work hard to get that age demographic, in my view, vaccinated.
But this demographic push to kind of Bigfoot some variations of zoning is squarely aimed at Lower Fairfield County. A lot of legislators not happy with it. There were some votes over the past few days. Joining us right now is Republican State Rep. Kimberly Fiorello. Kim represents District 149, parts of Greenwich and Stamford. Kim, hi. It's Paul at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Paul. Very happy to be here, and hello to everyone in Bridgeport and all your listeners.
Well, thanks, Kim. We appreciate it. We know you're jamming with everything going on in Hartford. So, Kim, I was talking to some legislators last week, and I noticed that some of these bills were advanced out of committee, and I'm reading and hearing from some people, well, they were kind of, at least on the surface, there was an appearance that some of the more objectionable parts of these bills were kind of scalpeled out. But I also heard that those parts may be in some other bills. You know, for folks, Kim, who are really concerned with this, where do we stand now on this whole thing?
Well, thank you so much for keeping your eye on this bouncing ball. And there's lots of balls that are bouncing on this topic of zoning. And there are several bills that have advanced, and the bills have changed. And some of the more troublesome parts, like as-of-right development near transit and Main Street, has been dropped, and the minimum requirements for parking. Oh, I apologize.
It's okay. You're allowed.
Some of those parking minimums where you wouldn't have been allowed to have parking minimums have dropped. But the bills still, you know, we definitely still need to watch them because, for example, 6611, which is the fair share bill, that would have a working group with very little input from the regular folks create different fair share percentages of housing. And this is on top of our, you know, very troubled experience with 830G. If anyone knows what I mean by 830G, it's probably because you've had a tough time with developers coming in to build 830G. Mm-hmm. And this would add more percentages that are mandated. It also expands the definition of aggrieved parties to include, you know, activist nonprofit groups that can now sue your town. The desegregate bill has changed, but, you know, in it, if you read the language, it changes the purpose of zoning to be different from, you know, controlling light and air, controlling over development on land, to being about zoning becoming a tool for desegregation. But, you know, truth is people still have a right to live where they want to live. So I'm not sure how they intend to change the purpose of zoning. And then we have septic changes in 961.
Yeah.
So in general, these bills are about density. It's about a benefit to developers. And, you know, 24-hour hearing, just one time.
I know.
For zoning. Is that enough for us to fundamentally change how our towns make decisions on development?
Now, Kim, you and I both know that sometimes these bills, yeah, they make it out of committee, but that's where they crash and end. Some of them never get to a floor vote. Can you see any of these, all of them, none of them? You know, would there be enough trepidation from your colleagues across the aisle to say, hey, nah, not now, not going into an election year for the governor next year, or not? What do you think?
Well, I would say this is a real message to the people of Connecticut. You know, please do not be discouraged that we have so-called one-party rule in our state, because all power derived from the government comes from us. So at every point, every day, we should be, you know, assertive citizens. And to note, there are two dummy bills also with the label of zoning, one in the Senate and one in the House. And these are empty vessels where bill language could be put in at the last moment. And these dummy bills really bypass the public hearing process, because the public hearings are done. The language can be added and voted on. So what worries me is that, you know, this movement to consider zoning to be racist and to have state mandates to create affordable housing. I mean, we are not talking about broad-based tax, regulatory, or licensure reforms that would incentivize job creators, which goes towards housing becoming affordable. These are forced top-down, one-size-fits-all mandates again and again. And unfortunately, we also have it coming from the federal government with President Biden's American Jobs Plan. On page 12, it talks about zoning and eliminating local zoning. My point is, you have to keep your eye on the bouncing ball. We have to keep communicating to our legislators. We do have a rally coming up. This is a local grassroots group, and this is truly grassroots. These folks are just regular people like you and me. And ct169strong.org. Please find them on Facebook also. 169 meaning the number of municipalities in our state. We're doing a rally on Saturday, April 10, 12 to 1, at the Fairfield Town Hall Green. It is only by citizens asserting ourselves over and over relentlessly that we have a chance to stop these kinds of bills.
Kim, thank you. We appreciate the time. I know there's some palatable anger in that part of the state by things that have been said by some Democrats, including the mayor of New Haven, who should know better, but we'll keep that there. I don't want to ruin your evening for you. We'll check in down
Not
the road.
At all.
State Rep Kim.
You know, our passion and everyone's passion comes from wanting solutions that really work. And solutions don't come from government. And it's just more government solutions in Connecticut. And we really need to just stay on the ball. And thank you, Paul, and thank you to all your listeners for all the activism that you guys do on the part of those who believe in freedom.
Thank you, Kim. Appreciate it. State Rep. Kim Fiorello, District 149, Greenwich and Stamford. Kim, thanks, and we'll talk down the road. Have a good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.